minute. Crossfade.
The Daily Talk Show.
A conversation sometimes worth recording. With Josh Jensen and Tommy Jacket.
It's a Daily Talk Show, episode 160.
Mate.
What's going on?
Oh, it's I'm just sitting in the sun. Outside. Actually, I'm in the car, but the sun is, it's blaring. It's lovely here in Melbourne. Whereabouts is my buddy?
Oh, I didn't know what you were going to call me then.
But my homeboy.
I'll take buddy.
My homeboy.
Yeah.
My bitch.
Yeah, okay. I'll take them all.
You are all.
Which is why I'm your bitch. No, I'm currently in Istanbul, and I'm wrapped because where we're staying has probably the best internet that I've had on the entire trip.
Oh, I don't think anything can top the internet that Osher Gunsberg posted about. Did you see that?
Oh, was it? Yeah, it was low, wasn't it?
It was like 350 megabyte download.
Oh yeah,
it was
sure.
Huge. I think, how do you
was
get that?
This from the five? Was that from the 5G stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, 5G.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was talking to a client who is in the internet provider space, and he was just saying, because my whole thing is, I'm like, NBN was a waste, like the National Broadband Network, like they fucked it because they went halfway there, and then at the last bit they just kept all the old tech and stuff, like,
yeah,
you know, the copper and things like that. But I was saying, like, wouldn't you just have, you know, if you were to do it in this day and age, wouldn't you have just used 5G, like really fast wireless, and yeah, had everyone on that? And he was saying that the cost of wireless and the stuff like bottlenecks and things like that, like, it's a big problem. Mm. So,
well, I've got no clue. My router says it's like there's a 5G login and it doesn't work. So I've got no clue what's going on.
Well, yeah. So that would be, I'm guessing that's like 5 gigahertz or whatever. That would be for faster, like newer devices.
Yeah.
So when you're, my understanding is when you're on a Wi-Fi, on Wi-Fi, the speed of the Wi-Fi will only be as fast as the slowest device on the, like, so for instance, if you've got an old, say phone, or maybe not a phone, maybe like a laptop or something like that.
Yeah.
And it can only get maybe 8 megabits a second as a download on the Wi-Fi network. Everything else on the network will then go at that same speed.
Mm.
So 5G on a Wi-Fi connection just means that you can put like your newer iMacs and stuff like that, and you'll still have the full speed.
I mean, was this, was
so
this,
you should work it out.
Was this a soft tech review or tech show from JJ? Or
if it was, I don't think it's going ahead because I was boring the fuck out of myself.
I'll tell
that.
You just quickly my first taste of the real fuck up that is the NBN, and that was, yeah, sitting in my office in Collingwood and looking out the window. It's like a, you know, a business hub for anyone listening. Not you, Josh. I'm not telling you what our office is like. But I mean, you've been gone for a while, so there has been some changes. Your desk is no longer there. No, it's still there. But I was sitting sort of in the common area, and I see these two guys just like with clipboards and in some sort of like high vis looking work attire, and they're walking through and just looking up and kind of pointing at things, and I decided to get up and go see who they are, what they wanted, and I said, "Hey guys, where are you from?" I said, "Oh, we're just we're surveying. We're from the NBN." I said, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Oh, we're just looking at where NBN will be installed throughout this area." I was like, "Are you fucking, yeah, kidding me?" I didn't say this to them. Two people being paid to walk around the area to point at things and write down a few notes to say where they might install the NBN when they go ahead with it. How ridiculous is that?
How far off? I mean, I think it's ridiculous specifically for you, given that you've already gone ahead and got fiber anyway in that building.
Yeah. The dude who rents out all the spaces paid the money to have it put underground and come through. Yeah. So it's so bizarre where the government will spend money. It's a complete rig. Like some, there's been, but it's like the solar programs. They're starting to crack down on those now. Where I think I saw last week that one of the they're going to have like a government, not like a grant, but basically they're going to ruin all these solar scam businesses out there that were taking advantage of it by offering it directly from them. I don't quite get it, but there has been a lot of phony work going on with solar systems. And you know, that's half the calls I get from random numbers. You know, excuse me, sir, do you have solar at your house, mate? I don't even own a house. Now you made me feel like a piece of shit for not owning my own property.
Trevor Long, whenever I talk about NBN or think about NBN, I always think of him because he always has pushback on people bagging out their NBN connection because probably, you know, 50% of the time the problem that people are having with their NBN isn't specific to the NBN, and it's like an ISP issue, it's like a hardware issue, stuff like that. But I think even all of that shit aside, if I think about when was the NBN, like it would have been like 2006 or something, that it was sort of like coming into motion, and I was just so excited about the future. Just like, you wouldn't believe how happy I am when I have a good connection. If I've got a good connection, I can download podcasts and I can download YouTube stuff. And maybe it's a bit sad.
Maybe it's a very first world problem. That was the most first world problem.
It's got that vibe.
Hey,
I remember actually on the first world problem thing, I remember, I don't say that much anymore because I remember I was working when I was working at a company. And I was doing social media and I did this post where I was like, Android versus iPhone, all that sort of thing. And I said, you know, at the end, it was like hashtag first world problem. And then I got this email from a guy who'd been at the company for a long time. He's like, you know, like a lot of our customers are from like third world countries. So it's just like, it's not a good look.
It is.
And I feel like ever since then I've really backed off on the first world problem banter.
Yeah, I think it was definitely popular at one point.
That's what she said. That's what she said has also dropped off.
Has it? Well,
I think so.
Hashtag, putting hashtag and then saying something. You give that a red hot crack every now and then. That has definitely fallen off slightly. But hey, at least we're not doing Indian accents on our show like some radio presenters in Melbourne. But you know, each to their own.
Is that I know who that's a digger. That's okay. you've had your. It's funny. The one other interesting thing about this podcast is, as we go, I feel like my willingness to say shit about people, I just never, like, I said it last week too, but I always am just like, why did I say it? I could have said that exact thing and been a little bit more vague or shit like that. When you have a microphone, ever do that when you were at Shepparton? Did you ever say something about someone that you then were like,
I think, you know what, as much as we have very little filter for what we're doing, I think this is more dangerous where we're playing than doing radio, because I think you know that it's live. There's a process for you before you even get to, you know, broadcast out to the people that you are, and so it's very filtering. Like I swore, I think I said shit once in 2 years, and it would have been in the context of talking about a dog's feces. Like never like saying it because I just want to go, oh shit. And
I got worried because the do you know that, I think it's Daryl Lyons, he's the dude who's got the fake
pack.
Rig, what's that called,
six pack.
Yes. He's a paparazzo dude.
Yeah, he became the mayor of Geelong, and I think he made a bit of coin out of being a paparazzi. years and years ago.
Be careful with what you say, because what I was going to say is he's just like, I saw in the news maybe a month ago that he was suing a presenter on community radio for saying something about him.
No.
Yeah.
They probably made fun of his hair. I actually quite like him, so if he sued me, it'd be this weird thing of a guy that you actually... You know, get around. Here you go.
This is the cut. This is you're trying to dig your way out of any possible legal issues,
mate. We should try and get him on the show. Just we go to every length for him not to sue us. We have him featured. He's got his own segment every Thursday on our show. He gets to say what he wants.
Maybe it could be Darren Lyon's Lion Facts, where we basically give him a Wikipedia page on lions, the animal.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to sort of maybe tell us one interesting fact about a lion every episode.
Hey, I need you to tell me about what it was like in Cappadocia, where you were in hot air balloons in that unbelievable... Looks like extreme hot air ballooning, because you're around 40,000 other hot air balloons. How was it? What was the experience like?
Oh, it was amazing. It was like we went up at the beginning, we were pretty low, and we were thinking, I was thinking anyway, I was like, this doesn't seem very high. But by the end of it, we were 1,000 meters up. We were a kilometer up in the air.
Wow.
It's amazing. I was like right near the middle, and so the flame was really close, which I liked, because it kept me warm.
And but you're holding onto the driver's leg because you were scared?
I was like, I feel like the concern with that, like you don't think about when you're up in the air how, like it wasn't until he said we're at 1,000 meters, I looked down and I'm like, wow, this would be, it wouldn't be that hard to fall out.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it feels like whenever going to, like being in Turkey and doing that experience, anything that's a little bit more dangerous, I feel like I'm like, I wonder what they do in Australia, because some of the shit that they were doing, I was like, I'm sure that this protocol wouldn't fly in regards to like occupational health and safety in Australia. But yeah, it was awesome.
Do you know my only interaction with hot air ballooning was the time that I was driving to work on Punt Road, and Amy said, that hot air balloon looks really, really low. And for anyone that doesn't know, Punt Road is like one of the busiest roads within peak hour in Melbourne. They replace the P with a C because that's how annoying it is. C-U-N-T road. Woof, woof.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's like, look at that. And then I was like, nah, I reckon it's just about to go up. And then we drive a few more, you know, a couple of hundred more metres, and then I see it coming down, so I'm like, oh, I've got to pull in just to capture this, make a vlog about it. And so we pulled in. Yeah. I ended up helping this guy. I wouldn't say crash land, but it's definitely not a purposeful landing where he was meant to. It was this he literally wedged it. He landed on this wedge of grass, and I think he was trying to get it off the road. My guess is that they would get fined a shitload if they land on roads and cause, like, cause chaos.
It'd probably like create a whole like a case that they have to go through and report on and shit like that.
And so this guy literally landed this hot air balloon in this tiny little bit of grass, and I was helping because they threw this rope out, and I was helping this other guy from the hot air balloon company just pull and hold onto this thing. We had our full weight.
So was another guy there from the company? Had they already found them?
Yeah, so what happens in Melbourne, they set them up in a park or whatever, and then the guy with the van drives, because they can't just go, well, I'm taking off in this park and I'm going to land in that park. It's like they could, the wind drifts, and so there's someone sort of like tracking them. And so this was that guy in the van who jumped down. He's like, mate, give us a hand. I was right amongst it.
Where did they start off from? So they ended up in Punt Road, not far from the city.
Yeah.
Do you know where they started from?
No, I don't know where they started from, but I know that they were trying to land in Albert Park, in the Albert Park Lake district.
Not in the lake.
Not in the lake, but in the in that area. Yeah, another one landed.
He was trying to get a story. He was trying to get a story like the Hudson River hero dude.
Sully.
Doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah, not exactly. Quite Sully. Another one landed in the Port Phillip Bay, just off the beach. So the reason I'm saying this, they're not actually that safe, but they seem to have success in not doing this every single day, landing them. I wonder if there was any, did you hear any whispers, anyone talking about, you know, stories, stuff that had gone bad?
Well, the guy, it's funny, once we'd landed, he was the captain or whatever you want to call him.
Call him Sully.
Sully. He was joking that, like, he's like, you know, you all didn't die. Like,
oh,
I was I think another thing that probably, or maybe it would happen in Australia, I don't know. But yeah, he was having a good laugh at the fact that we didn't die. But we ended up 15 kilometers from where we took off, and we were far away from any other of the balloons. Like, he'd said that we'd gone really far.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was interesting. But the one thing about the whole experience, like the whole tour, was it was like obviously a Turkish company, and they're just so loose with things, like timing with stuff, like communication. It's just like an example. We were told that the bus was going, like, we were going to be picked up at 10 to 5, 4:50 to get to the hot air balloons. No one came until it was like 5 past 5, and we get onto the minibus. There's only like another couple coming on as well who were from Turkey.
Yeah.
And I said my name, and I could tell that it wasn't really like connecting. Like, he didn't, I said, "Oh, Joshua." And he was like, like, just sort of fucking like said something. And then so we like just got on, and then we got to the site, and we still don't know, but I don't think we were on the right balloon. I think because we got there, and he came up to us, and I showed him like our itinerary, and he was doing some talking and that sort of thing. And then they take us all to the hot air balloon that we're going on, and everyone had their name they signed next to it. And we didn't have our name on the sheet. And so there was that, like, the funny thing is with all these experiences is it seems to be wrapped up in initial panic, which is just like you're trying to fill in all these gaps of like, are we going to be able to go on? Is this going to be, all of that sort of thing.
Wow. That's, at least you got it. It would have been better if you got it for free. It was expensive, wasn't it? Oh, it made me think about how different you'll feel when you go to Greece. You're going to Greece, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, they're the chillest. You know, don't worry. This guy that picked us up from the airport when we went there for our honeymoon, I said to him, mate, they've lost our bag, or it didn't come. It wasn't on the connecting flight. And he said, I've got to go back tomorrow and pick it up. And he's like, don't worry. He was just so laid back. They just don't give a shit. And I went back and found my bag just like at this counter that had no one there. And I pressed the bell and waited a few minutes. I literally just took my bag. I was like, I'm out of here. No one cared. So I think
the thing that was funny was we ended up... when we were on the tour, they just randomly said to us, we need to take you to the agent so that you can pay, because we'd only paid like, you know, 10% or whatever deposit. But what they hadn't made clear was that they wanted it cash.
Oh, no.
And so it was like, how much was it? It was like 1,500 euros, which that like included our internal flights, included everything, right?
Yeah.
And they wanted 1,500 euro cash, and we haven't been traveling around with a lot of cash because we're gone for such a long period of time. So we go to an ATM, you know, put in the amount, and then the ATM dies. Like, it says that it's like working. So I think you hear like the cash, it just shuts off. And so I'm like, uh-oh. And so I went to him. I'm like, we went back to the place and said, hey, like, it's not working. Can we do a bank transfer? Can we pay credit card? And he was like, they're obviously doing everything off the books, and that's how they sort of keep it a sort of a lower price.
Yeah.
And so we were there for like 10 minutes trying to work out what to do. And I'm like, look, take a photocopy of my passport. We're going to like send you the money. And he ended up taking me on. All of a sudden, he's like, a guy who spoke English said, oh, he's going to take you on a quad bike. He didn't even say quad bike. He said he's just going to go take one of you down the road and to another ATM. And before you know it, like, I'm on a quad bike zooming along and he takes me to an ATM. And surprisingly, like, I wasn't thinking we were going to be able to do it, but we could take out the cash. And
took out $1,500, €1,500.
That's crazy. Yeah, and the interesting thing was, though, he thought that maybe the ATM didn't have enough cash, like euros, to be able to deliver it. So he'd taken 1,500 euros himself in cash that he was depositing into the ATM with the hope that it would then give it back to us. But he put in hundreds and it came out in 50s, so it didn't really make a difference. But the thing was, all the power was out. So the issue we had with our ATM was the power had gone out, and it had gone out everywhere. So all the ATMs were reloading, and there was that sort of concern at the beginning where it's like, are they going to, like, I sort of had this thought that the power was going to turn on and it was going to open up and the cash was going to be there and someone was just going to take it. But it was all good. It didn't come off our card.
Have you been feeling like you've just, like, because all you're seeing is money going out, you're on holidays, and there is a thought in my mind where I'm like, fuck, every cent I'm taking out is, it's not getting put back in because I'm not working at the moment. Have you felt like that?
No, it's been okay. I think that we budgeted well. So, like, because we've been sort of zigging and zagging, doing expensive stuff and then cheaper stuff, it's been pretty good so far. I think that, I'm trying to think what sort of, probably it stings paying too much for things in cheaper places. But it's still not that expensive, if that makes sense. So, like, I think that the thing that you need to be careful of when you travel is you can get into the like the smaller numbers, which I think is not worthwhile. So, like, for instance, a Coke Zero might normally cost like a dollar or something in this city, like really cheap. And then you go to a place that costs like $2 and you're just like, oh man, that's a fucking rip off. You get like that. And it's like, in reality, like, look, let's just, or even like we, got lunch and it was like 40 lira for a meal, which was more than what we were used to spending. But reality was that was like $10 for a meal. So I think it's a bit of that where it's just like sometimes your perspective goes. But I'm trying, here is an example of where you start counting the money is we were leaving our hotel yesterday to go back to Istanbul on the plane.
Yeah.
And the shuttle arrives to pick us up. And all of a sudden, like, I've taken mine and Bree's bag down, which we've nicknamed Bree's bag the A380. It's just real fuck it. It's massive. It's way big. It's like a jumbo version of mine. And it's just like, it can't go on every, it can't land everywhere because it's too big. It's just that's sort of, it's actually stuck. Like, everyone's... Even when we were traveling with mates, they're like, oh, Josh, do you want to grab the A380? Like,
yeah, it's sort of and she's worn one of the outfits the whole time.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's hot. You just wear a dress or whatever. It's like, you don't need to take 30 dresses to wear.
I'm still wearing the same actually not this T-shirt because I just chucked it on. But yeah, I've been wearing like two T-shirts on this entire trip.
Yeah.
But the, so we... As we were going to leave, I was already in the van. I'm like, what's Bray doing? And she's like, I've lost my sunglasses. So, I'm losing my voice again. Hang on. So I, yeah. So what had happened is apparently she had, probably half an hour before we went, like the hotel, there's hardly anyone in there. Mm. It's sort of like a boutique sort of hotel. You're sleeping in like a cave type of thing.
They're all out trying to get cash out of ATMs.
Exactly. But the, no, so she, she'd left them, or this is what she thinks has happened. She left them in the toilets, like in the main toilets, because there's so, she's been wearing like a jumpsuit for, is it a jumpsuit? Is that what it's called? Yeah. And so it, like, it's good because it sort of covers her legs and stuff like that. So, you know, being in a Muslim country, all that sort of shit, trying to be as respectful as possible. So anyway, but to take it off, she has to like undo, basically take all her clothes off to be able to go. So she'd taken her sunnies off and had put them on a bench. Anyway, they were taken. So like her it's her first pair of like where she's actually put some money into sunglasses. But how would you react if Amy had lost a pair of sunnies? What do you think? So I'm on the bus. Break like is in a real sort of state. She's like huffing and puffing, like, oh, yeah, do you know where? Like, I'm trying to work it out. So I'm just sort of sitting there. And then what do you think your first words would be in that situation?
If Amy had lost her, or like looking for hers.
Yeah.
Fuck. My problem is I get frustrated. I feel like it's something she's lost
that.
Something. Yeah. Oh yeah. I take it on. I think that. Yeah. I feel the annoyance of it. Oh, how much I start thinking about how much they're worth, and having got any sunnies. Yeah. That's bad. That's what I do.
Well, so my reaction, which Bree was not happy with at all, was, it's a lesson.
The one thing you don't need to hear when you're feeling the pain of losing something is this is a lesson.
But I think
it's all learning.
It's a learning. That's what Bree said.
It's all learning.
It's a learning. But Bree said it in a really smug way. I disagree. But don't you think
that was smug?
It's a learning. But it's a learning. Like, I thought that was. I said to her afterward, like, she really cracked with me. I'm like, hang on. Like, the thing is, how have I become the bad guy? Like, the thing is, she's like, you could have a little bit more sympathy. I'm like, the thing is that I'm going to be paying 50%. Like, you're going to, like, this is annoying for both of us because, like, we're going to have to get new glasses. But it wasn't like I was like, that's going to cost us money or that sort of thing. I'm like, I feel like I sometimes just want to be, I don't want to take away the learning by saying, oh, it's okay, we'll just buy a new pair. I want, like, you got to feel it. You need to, like, sit in that sort of state so that you never, ever leave your sunglasses in a dumb spot again.
Mate, I bought a pair of sunglasses on the Friday for the races on the Saturday and got really pissed and lost them. They were $350.
Yeah, well, this is a good thing. It's like I'd sort of been thinking in my head, are they going to be like $500 or whatever? But Ray-Bans actually aren't as expensive as you think. They were like $160.
In 25 shows time, we'll be together in the States, and Ray-Bans are seriously cheap over in America. So she may as well just hold out, buy a fake pair, and then buy.
I don't know if you can hold out, because the thing is, she's got like. Her eyes are quite sensitive or whatever. Like, she's got like a little dot that we need to be careful of with the sun.
She's got blue eyes. It's sensitive.
Yes. So she can't like just go and we can't just go to a market and get El Cheapo ones that are going to fuck her eyes. We've got to get ones that are at least protective.
Mate, they're not magnifying glasses.
Well, I think like the cheap ones, that's what the issue is, isn't it? It's like that they're not like, they don't provide actually any protection.
Some of them, it depends on. If you're getting like, the rainbow-coloured Ray-Bans that 5 euros all across Europe. Probably not. But I think you can get some. Yeah, just get a cheap pair. Seriously, I've been thinking about buying clothes recently, just like new jeans, new hats and stuff. I'm like, I'm just going to wait till America because it is so much cheaper there.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how. I feel like it changes with the state. Sometimes it's a lot cheaper, and then, like, I guess it all depends on the
exchange rate
and stuff like that.
When I was there, it was dollar for dollar. That was so good.
I mean, that was a unique time. So you counted it. Is it 25 days until we're in the States?
No, 25 shows. So today...
Shows until we're in the States.
Today's number 25. Tomorrow, 24. I'm counting down. Maybe you're not. You're on holidays, but I'm definitely counting down the days. And if you haven't been listening, this is the first episode. Josh is traveling for 100 days. And I'm meeting him in America, and we're going to continue the podcast. We have while you've been gone. Yeah. We haven't missed a show. And then we're rendezvousing in NYC.
I got some feedback from Rob Ward, who's actually been on the podcast. He's the founder of Quadlock. He was saying, he's like, why do you keep bringing up the fact that you're late to podcasting? And he's like, he's spot on. I think like it's 100% like an insecurity where I'm like, there's that desire to be like, to explain yourself, because I feel like I'd been consuming podcasts for so long. Yeah. And I just feel like, I don't know, what's your vibe on it? I feel like I do it way more than you.
You do, definitely.
You just feed off it.
But even since the time, and we're very... on the alert for what's happening around in this space. So, but even since we've started this 6 months, 7 months ago, I've seen so many pop up, so many people that I just wouldn't ever think would have one for no other reason than it's not what they do normally. And then all of a sudden they've got a podcast.
Like it's a landscaper or something, like just like random industries and stuff.
It's actually one of my favourite now, the landscaping podcast, talking about different turf, different diggers. But
I had an idea. I don't know. I don't think we'll have anyone that will take it before we do it in New York. But I was thinking of contacting one of the helicopter tour companies and trying to organise a deal where we do a podcast from a helicopter above New York and have one of the like a pilot or someone from the company as a guest on the show.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, as we were talking before, different countries have different regulations. One of our listeners is a train driver and isn't allowed to, because I was thinking we should just go for a ride in the train and do a podcast with him while
he can't even listen to Danny can't even listen to podcasts.
I wonder what the deal is with pilots. I mean, I want him to focus. I don't want to come down into the Empire State Building.
But think about it like this: like if they talk on their, I was thinking if we could use their existing headsets and we could tap into that, they already talk. So yeah, maybe it does have to be someone from the company. But the reason I bring it up is because I was doing some research and then I found a show specifically for helicopter pilots.
Sick.
Like a podcast for helicopter pilots. And the guy's based in Queensland who does the show. I should try and find out the name. I think it was called like The Rotary Show. I feel like I could get behind that, get the sort of a niche podcast to sort of, you know, start to learn a subculture, like
there is heaps of subculture podcasts. I was thinking if anyone has any contacts in America, specifically New York City and LA, Josh and I will be there from late September 29th to the 11th of October. So if you do have someone that we should get on the show, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. If you just so happen to be a helicopter pilot from New York listening, I mean, perfect.
Sure, we've got a few, I'm sure. Any other exciting news? What else is happening? Catch me up on your life.
Mate,
what did you actually do on the weekend?
It's my last week of my 20s, so I'm feeling a bit older. I've always been the younger person in the group, and I feel like 30's not old at all. But I feel like leaving my 20s is quite significant for myself, and I need to grow the fuck up. And no, actually,
Do you feel that? Do you feel like what's the pressures of turning 30? Do you think?
Oh, no pressures, but I think it's just a new ball game. I've been within the 20s for years, and I think you go through your teens, and you're trying to get out of your teens, and then you get to a time where you're kind of just like within your 20s, and you. And you you know, you just, you're young. It's quite, it's still quite young, and maybe you're not taken really seriously. And then you start leaving, and then I feel like now I'm leaving my 20s, and maybe people will start taking me a bit more seriously.
I think it's true though. I didn't realize how much that was a factor when I was younger in regards to the insights that I had based on the experiences I had with technology and even internally within companies. I was just always perplexed with like, oh, why are we doing it this way? Like, do they know about this or that? And like, I think there's probably, you know, there's probably 30% of that which was just being young and thinking you know everything anyway, which isn't, I think, so probably people are pushing up against that. But I definitely think that if I had the knowledge around sort of tech and all that sort of stuff within a company, I think it would have been like a completely different experience.
Yeah, working within. I feel like how do I put it? I feel like I am now getting more of a grasp on life, and I'm in a better place now. But I just wish I had some of, you know, it's always the wish I had it when I was younger. But
yeah,
I've just been reflecting on my life. Like, I think about all the time I wasted fucking going to pubs, and, you know, as much as I had heaps of fun, made lots of contacts, and, you know, it, all of that. But I feel like, yeah, there was a lot of time wasted. But I don't think I was mature.
And you can't look back. Yeah, I think it's that whole thing where it's like there's a point in saying, like, in accepting that and then using it as fuel for the future, rather than it being. I mean, one of the things that I heard, I can't remember what it was from, but it was like, it's that 1% every day. I saw some sort of equation around like doing something versus not doing something.
Yeah.
And that's definitely been my approach, which is like, okay, what is like the small thing that I can actually do today?
Yeah.
Even though it seems insignificant, but it's actually going to move me closer. Because I think that so often, I know I do this where it's like, I see something as such a small action that I don't see it as significant enough to even bother. Whereas if I'd done it, it would have brought me a tiny bit closer to where I wanted to go.
Yeah. There's this guy that I follow on Instagram. He's quite outrageous, and he's usually yelling advice at people. But he's been doing those Q&A, Insta stories. And one of them was like something about, did you travel in your 20s? And
I did say this.
Basically, he's like, no, talking about building a business and spending time just not fucking around in your early 20s to set yourself up. But it's like, I've done a lot in my life already where it's like, you could easily see it as a waste, but then when I see someone else talking about how they haven't spent any time partying, they haven't done any travel because they've been building their future, I also think, fuck, you've missed out, bro. And so that's where I look at what I've done and my life, and I think there's plenty of time. Yeah, there is time.
You don't want your whole life to be a career. You don't want. I don't think you don't want your life to be any single thing, because once that single thing goes or comes into question, then you lose your identity. So I think that's like interesting, which is like, I think that for a lot of my life, I've my work or whatever or what I do has been a bit of my identity. I think the other thing that happens when you travel is you realize how insignificant you are in some regards, like how you think about when you're doing like an Instagram post or something like that, you think that you're connecting with a bunch of people, when in reality it's like I've got like say 1400 or 1500 or whatever it is followers on Instagram. Let's say half of them actually like see my content and are active users. It's like the size of my old school. So it's like I've essentially got like the broadcast, this connection that I have is like, I think the perception in our minds is that we're like, man, we're connected to so many people. But in reality, it's like a dot. It's tiny. And I think that that's, it's a, sort of a humbling thought to then realize that like, stop taking shit too seriously and shit doesn't matter as much as
I think it's easy to look around and see people, especially when you're young, who are having success and think like, fuck, why is it not happening for me? But it's like, it could take you 20 years to get there. I wonder if people, I wonder if, I mean, if we all knew when it would happen for us or, you know, whatever we're sort of striving for, like, oh, would people be more patient? I don't know if they, I think people are just impatient with these things, with life. And yeah, because it's it's a long. It's like life is a long game. You're sticking at things, and it might not work, or it might.
And there's always a desire to want more. I think that I think if you can get rid of that, because I think that I remember hearing somewhere it's like you need to know how to be happy now in the situation you're in, so that when the situation might get better, or if you think it needs to get better, then when it is, you know how to be in that place. Whereas people are expecting a thing to happen, like, you know, financial success or something to happen to then make them happy. Whereas you know, it is something I think that I constantly, perspective wise definitely traveling, you have all these micro moments over that where it's like, like you got to snap out of it, where you're like annoyed at, yeah, like the cost of a drink, or like at them being late at a tour, or feeling like you're being hustled. Like the one thing about the tour, there was a few times where it's like you go to a, this is the most sort of controlled tour group we've been in because we've sort of been doing everything ourselves. But this is one that was sort of a bit sort of all inclusive. And it's like the guy said to us, who was our guide, he's like, oh, now you're sort of talking as if like we're doing something like all real bespoke stuff. He's like, I want to take you off sort of the different spots, you know, where it's not as busy, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he said, now we'll do lunch a little bit later. We'll do lunch at about 2:30 because I want to go to one of my favorite places and I just want to make sure that we can get in and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was sort of pitched as it was as if this sort of like local experience, or that it was his sort of favorite thing. And we like arrive and there's about 20 buses. Like, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And you go in, it's just like huge tables with just like tourists on every single table. And I think like in those moments you can be like, what the fuck? This is like, this isn't the experience that I want. Like, I'd much prefer to be like, Brie and I talk about the fact that it's like, we don't mind if something is touristy, but it can't be shit food as well. Like the thing that I find is it's like you pay more for touristy stuff and then it's also shit stuff. Like it's not like delicious local stuff. It isn't done with love. So I think, but it's that perspective, right? It's being like, but at the same time, we're in fucking this amazing part of the world having this experience.
Yeah, I felt like that in Spain, in Barcelona. You can get this cable car from like the beach over to this mountain and then you're just paying through the nose having fried salty food. But I just loved it. I just lapped it up. I just drank the beer and ate the salt in batter. And then, but yeah, it's
to a group specifically. It's like whenever you're in a group and it just feels like you're sort of being carted around or having carpet sold to you or jewelry and shit like that. Like, but it's all part of the experience.
And I hope you've bought all of them for our office when you get home.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to be beautiful. A lot of, we'll have a glass with the Turkish delight so you can help yourself with.
Oh, yum. I feel like a Turkish delight.
Finally, just before we go, I'm on the 16th. I just got a notification that says you hit your goal of 16 hours. What it's about.
16 hours.
On my app.
Something of audiobook?
No. I'll show it to you, see if you can see that on the screen.
I can't see. I've lost connection with you.
You can't see. That happens every time. I wonder why. It says fast complete. So I've got an app called Zero, which is by a guy Kevin Rose, who founded Dig, who had the podcast Dig Nation back in the day. And you just start it. And basically, this is the Rock, Hugh Jackman. This is the fasting that they do. So it's like
fasting.
16 hours. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So you must be pretty fucking hungry.
Yeah, no, I'm okay. But yeah, just because you know that I like to fast and all that sort of thing, but I have felt like it hasn't been controlled. It's been just sort of a little bit random. Whereas now it's like I put it on, it stopped eating at 4:45 p.m. and now it's, you know, 8:45 a.m. and I can eat. And it's all tracked. It's good.
Now what do? You eat everything and then fast again?
Nah, so I think that once you start fasting, you start being like, do I really want to have like all the sweet food and stuff at the breakfast, or should I be a little bit more sensible? So yeah, I'll probably I'll just sort of eat normally or whatever, and then finish it again at like 4 p.m. and then do it all again.
Yeah, brilliant.
And then you can track. Maybe you can give it a crack. Maybe give it a go. Not that you really need to do it, but... Could be, no, it'd be
like
actually
it.
A pain in the ass.
I like it. You've a guy created a timer that is basically an app that's basically just a timer.
It's time.
Just send an alarm.
Literally, that's all it is. But it's so, it is really nice, and just being able to track it, like it.
If The Rock uses it, I'm going to fucking use that shit.
Well, to be clear, The Rock doesn't use it. He just, it's just, he probably in some fucking article, they said that he does 16-hour fasts. So, you're basically doing the one that The Rock does. So I'm guessing I'm going to be completely jacked and shit without doing anything else, just not eating for 16 hours a day. So,
all right, guys. Well, we're going to see you tomorrow because that's what we
it's
do.
It's a Daily Talk Show, everyone. And, feel free to email us, hi@thedailytalkshow.com. And, I'm very excited for the next couple of months. I think it's going to be very exciting.
See you tomorrow, guys.
Catch you, guys. Bye.